WSBTRadio.com presents A Fan's Perspective on Notre Dame Sports. This is Dome and Domer.
Hello again, everybody. This is Dome and Domer, an online conversation about Notre Dame sports. We're sponsored by the South Bend Chocolate Cafe, and you can find us at Dome and Domer at WSBT.com. This is Ed Sullivan along with Mike Sullivan. Today we're going to talk about that great Notre Dame comeback against UCLA. Mike, how about the Irish?
Unbelievable. Historic comeback. Second time this year that we've been able to say that. Just an amazing finish to an otherwise very questionable performance by the offense.
Well, let's get into it. Let's just recap. Tell me what, I know I was in the stadium. You were watching on TV. Tell me your thoughts while you were watching on TV.
Well, it was disaster. It was, all hope had been lost after that fourth down. And I think most Notre Dame fans, being honest with themselves, thought after Quinn got stopped on fourth and one, this is it. The season has come unwound and the BCS hopes were gone.
Well, in the stadium, there was a feeling through the whole game of, I cannot believe this is happening. And you really never sensed that we had anything together. There was always something going on. But I have to say this, too. After Brady's quarterback sneak was stuffed, there was not a mass exodus for the exits.
Well, there never is. I think at Notre Dame Stadium, the fans are going to stay there till the end no matter what. And that's one of the things that makes it a special place. But at home, you could almost hear the remote controls clicking around the country.
People have no faith.
Well, it looked pretty bleak. I think we can all agree on that. But the Irish, again, were resilient. One of the hallmarks of the Charlie Weiss era in 1.5 years has been that there's just no quit in this team.
No, that's really true. And you didn't see anybody on the field looking like they were beat. I mean, the defense came out for that final stand with a tremendous amount of energy. And that I think that showed in the way they played.
Well, let's talk about the way the last couple minutes played out. For one, the use of timeouts by this coaching staff. I mean, it's been a long time since we've seen end game situations managed so well.
Yeah, that's right. In fact, as you and I were speaking about it, I did not realize that Charlie used his first timeout right after Brady got stuffed. And as Michigan State takes the field for offense, the new rule is that clock's running.
Exactly. On change of possession, when the ball is set, the clock runs as opposed to the snap of the ball. So that forced Charlie to take the first timeout immediately after the change of possession instead of waiting until after first down. So a timeout was taken before first down,
right,
before second down,
right,
and before third down.
Right.
And I didn't realize that either at the time. And so after the third down play, I'm screaming, call a timeout, call a timeout.
Right.
But that, of course, we had used all of our timeouts
correctly. Yes. One of the things that struck me about that was how much time lapsed before the official set the ball and started the 25-second clock.
Well,
I was screaming in the stands on that.
Let's talk about the Pac-10 officials. Again, at home games, we're always using the officials of the visiting team's conference, which, I think we can debate that sometime, the merits of that.
Yeah.
But I thought these Pac-10 refs were horrible. Again, we see an opponent who doesn't get called for holding the entire game.
Oh, my gosh. And one of the things, you could call them horrible when calls go against you. You'd be a fan in that sense. But here's one thing. Inconsistent. They have a no call on what probably should have been an interference against us in a play that went down to the south end. Then coming back in the fourth quarter, if anything, it's an offensive pass interference,
and they
call it on the defense.
They were both no good. I think they should have been both no calls, but
that would have been consistent.
Yes. Right. The call on us, the interference call, was a horrible call. It, from my perspective, the Georgia or the UCLA player took a flop on the play. He fell down.
Not only that, he was grabbing.
Exactly. And then he fell down, to me it looked intentionally, to draw the penalty, which he did. Fortunately, the defense only held him to only three there.
Right.
But that 3 points was critical because it forced us to
Absolutely.
Go for the touchdown, which, of course,
Huge.
We
Huge.
Were able to convert.
The
on.
Other inconsistency by the officials was where the defense crosses the neutral zone and the offense moves without contact. One time they called it on UCLA, the other time they called it on Notre Dame.
Well, again, watching on TV, you get the benefit of seeing what happened. When they called it on UCLA, it was the correct call because Young moved out of his stance while the defender was in the neutral zone, resulting in the penalty on the defense. The second time, when Morton moved, the defender had gotten back. Right, no contact was made, and the defender got back, and then Morton moved, penalty on Notre Dame. So they actually got both of those right.
Okay.
But here's the call that they absolutely blew, which was the holding call on Young. We had 3rd and 13 late in the game, And Quinn hit Samardzija for the first down.
Oh.
And the holding call on that. Now, the TV replay.
Well, of course, NBC never shows it.
The replay they showed, you couldn't find holding on it. So no. Unless it happened off camera. But I want to see that one again.
Yeah. Well, let's talk a little bit about the beginning of that game, the first half of the game. We looked horrible, and actually through most of the game, the offensive line was tremendously inconsistent. Is it time we see some change of personnel? Do we have anybody else?
Well, that's a great question. I think the person I keep coming back to is Bob Morton. And, you know, we don't have the luxury of being at practice every day, seeing what's going on. But just from the limited vantage point you have in the stands or from TV, Bob Morton looks like he's been getting it handed to him most of the year.
He's struggling.
I think, you know, Young has showed enough promise and has made enough good plays. But we really continually lack that physical offensive line play. But let's give credit to UCLA, who has
their
been...
Their front six looks phenomenal.
All season long, they've been shutting down the run and been very tough on defense.
And it looked to me like they did not have to bring a lot of pressure to get flush Brady, hurry Brady, smack Brady around. So if you don't have to bring people... They had a lot of people to cover our stud receivers.
Right. They were bringing enough pressure just with their front four. Their defensive end, Hickman in particular, had
a
huge game.
Oh,
we just couldn't block him. And you're right. They were able to get pressure with four and drop seven, and that made it hard for the Irish. And, you know, fortunately, we made the plays when we had to, and you got to love the poise and composure of Quinn. And how about the confidence that Charlie Weiss continues to show in this team, both sides of the ball, by going for it on fourth down like he does? Do you like that? What do you think? When Charlie's going for it on fourth down, are you holding your breath?
I have to say, I thought there was one that broke in his favor, but I was really upset. And we threw the little swing pass to Darius, who got the, what was it, fourth and six?
It was fourth and six.
Okay, and we needed the three at least there.
But here's what I like about
it. We needed the three at least there.
Yeah, you could go back and say, oh, you know, that's too risky. But here's what I like about it. When he goes for it in those situations, there's no grab bagging. He's got his fourth and got to have it plays already called.
When you think about it.
And he knows exactly what buttons to push.
When you think about the fourth and anything more than a sneak, right? Then you think about the plays that he's run, and they've all been something that have sort of come out of nowhere and have surprised the defense.
Well, how about the fourth and inches on our first touchdown drive, and he throws it to Carlson down the field for 26 yards.
Man, you need a set there. Holy cow. That really takes something to be able to do that. But, look, let's get back to personnel issues for a moment. Is it time that we start seeing Prince and Aldridge? And we, you know, on this show last week, we were praising Darius, and we jinxed him. Okay,
of course.
We get it. The world should know it's our fault. But I think we need to see somebody with some more explosiveness back there, and we should give these guys a little bit of a chance.
I don't think the running game problems are, you know, you pin them on Darius. I think we talked about the
offense. Pin them on him,
right? So from that
the factor.
No, from the standpoint of the play of the offensive line, doesn't matter who you put back there. I think we're going to see more of Prince and Aldridge. And Prince was in the ball game on two key snaps in the red zone. But when the running game is not going, why bring Aldridge in there? To me, Aldridge is the guy you bring in there when you've got a little momentum on the run game and you're pounding him a little bit and you give him a little different look. But when you have to throw it, and we threw it 47 times, when you have to throw it, maybe Darius is the only guy that gives you receiving, protection, and running.
As we talked about, picking up blitzes and those kinds of things, we don't know if the young guys can do that, and so he may be going with Darius because of that.
And think about this. So many of the plays we run are run-pass options, and on the line of scrimmage,
you gotta be able to
Brady
know,
is calling
to it.
Run or pass.
That's right.
And if these guys are not in the pass game, you can't have them
now,
in there.
I agree. I understand what you're saying there. But I'm not prepared to say that the running game problems have no that Darius is not a factor in that.
I disagree with you completely.
I think we need somebody who's able to plant and get up the field through a hole quicker, more burst of speed. And I don't think Darius has that sometimes.
Well,
UCLA was a very quick defense.
They were.
And
we're going to see those other two kids, those young kids, playing over the next few weeks, I think, and we'll see more of that. A couple other personnel items real quick. How about this? Ambrose Wooden is essentially been benched. This is what I love about this coaching staff. The best guy is going to play. Ambrose Wooden, a returning starter, and, you know, when Terrell Lambert comes in because of an injury and gets the job done, Wooden doesn't get back on the field except in nickel situations. Lambert has beat him out. And
yep, no,
Darren Walls, who early gets a lot of playing time, hey, Darren Walls now is not out there. The best guy is going to play.
Yep, Brockington now seeing time.
Now Brockington. Mm-hmm. And they switched Travis Thomas over to strong side linebacker, right. So Brockington could have gone on the field.
Yep, you could look at that and you could say, boy, that shows how Charlie's going to put the best people there. You could also look at that and say, we're a little thin. You know, we're still a little thin. I mean, he's got to move people around, and sometimes maybe we're not getting as much competition as we need at certain positions. It's not like our defensive backfield is playing great, okay, that we're having people who are beating out other good people. It could be like, holy cow, who should I try now?
No,
because
I don't think
we have been burned. UCLA hasn't had a pass over 20 yards the whole season.
I understand that. I mean, I understand your point about the competition. I think the secondary is playing with more consistency, and Lambert's a big reason. You know who I was disappointed in? I thought Ndukwe played a horrible game.
Tell me why. I'm not sure.
Lousy tackling on both of those two long touchdowns.
Okay.
Ndukwe falls down on both of them and either can't get there or gets there late, and then he misses the tackle when he gets there late.
I thought he made a lot of other good plays throughout the game.
You know what? I really only saw one or two good plays that I thought Ndukwe made, so I was a little disappointed in his play.
They had a key third down, a little swing pass, and the
Oh, he came up big.
He came up
very
big.
Ndukwe cleaned him up. Richardson was there. Yeah. Brockington was there, and Ndukwe cleaned it up.
Yeah.
But overall, I thought Ndukwe played a poor game. But from a personnel standpoint, yes, the depth, I think, is a real problem, particularly in the offensive line. And maybe that's why these guys aren't physical, because for several years there hasn't been a lot of depth pushing some of these guys. And recruiting is how you solve that.
And, you know, this is something I've been saying. I think Charlie Weiss is doing a better job than most people realize, because I don't see us having the full complement of kind of top-level players throughout the program. And you don't need them just your first guy who's the top level. You need them to go 2.5 deep.
Well, that's absolutely.
And that's something that I experienced playing, that when you're not on a team that has that full complement, you can stay with teams that might be some of the top level teams. You could stay with them for a while, but eventually you just get worn down. I don't think we have we're not filled out yet. We're not.
I agree. I think you see that on the defensive line and at linebacker in particular. Well, anyway, bottom line is a historic win. We'll take the W, and happy to move on.
Holy cow.
At 6-1.
Yes, it was huge. It was huge.
But all what does this mean? What does it mean for the future? Where are the Irish headed? Does this mean that we're back on track, or are there problems again?
It means that you and I have to spend more time renting our garments over the rankings, which, you know, that was the one benefit of the Davyham era. We were irrelevant for that, so I saved the lining of my stomach a little bit, because now here again, for the fourth time, the Irish have dropped in the polls without a loss. Three of the four were wins.
I would love to see anybody else in the country that standard applies to. We win three times, two of them road wins, and we drop. And these are not wins over 1AA or non-BCS school teams.
That's right.
Georgia Tech, Michigan State, UCLA. I mean, you know, maybe none of them are national championship caliber this year, but beating those teams is worth something. It's worthwhile.
I'm sorry. Until Notre Dame began to turn the tide against Michigan State, the three bozos in the booth for ESPN were talking about how fantastic Michigan State is, the best backfield in the country.
Right.
We beat them and drop.
Exactly.
Georgia Tech.
It
was a big, huge ACC showdown, Georgia Tech versus Clemson. Why was it a huge showdown? Because somebody was good there, maybe, like Georgia Tech? But we beat Georgia Tech on the road, we dropped.
Right, and now Clemson is ranked ahead of Notre Dame in the Associated Press poll.
That's right.
And Clemson has got four dog wins over nobody and two legitimate wins. I think that you got to give them credit for beating Florida State and beating Georgia Tech convincingly.
That's right.
Other than that, Clemson has beaten
Florida Atlantic.
They lost to Boston College, beat Florida State, beat North Carolina, beat Louisiana Tech, and beat Wake Forest. I guess, you know, Wake Forest was undefeated going into that game. But, you know, again, why we're impressed with Wake Forest.
And don't forget about that Temple win.
And then they blew out Temple. Right. So now Clemson's, those six wins for Clemson are apparently more impressive than Notre Dame's six wins. I don't see it. I don't agree with that. And how about if you're BC? You know, it's not just us. I hate to defend BC.
Well, no, wait a minute.
Hey, I don't.
I'm a little tickled.
It pains me.
BC is sitting down there at 18th behind Rutgers and Boise State, among others.
Behind Clemson,
and
they beat.
And 8 spots behind Clemson,
same record they
beat.
Now,
yes.
BC's wins are over Virginia Tech, Florida State, Clemson, BYU. There's four pretty good wins right there.
I don't see how you make an 8-place distinction between them.
The polls make no sense whatsoever.
It makes no sense.
So we now drop for the fourth time this year without a loss. Mm-hmm. We drop.
That's
we dropped
right.
after the open
right.
date. We dropped after three wins. And now we're sitting
10th. Does it matter? But does it matter, Mike?
Yes. And you know what? You've convinced me here. Here's why it matters.
Go ahead. Everyone needs to pay attention. No, you go ahead.
Okay.
You can probably explain how I'm right better than I can explain how I'm right.
Ed, well, it doesn't happen often, but you are right in this situation. We were arguing about, hey, as long as we're in the top eight, it doesn't matter. But that was my point. If you're in the top eight, it doesn't matter. If you're fourth or eighth, we're going to fall out of the top eight and not be an automatic BCS qualifier unless we're top eight, which means – but it's always been this. I think it's always come down to this. We have to beat USC to be a BCS team. If we don't beat USC, we don't deserve to go to the BCS.
Well, that's ridiculous. That's a ridiculous statement.
No, it's not. If
we can't play a game like we did last year against USC and end up losing on the last play,
we will not deserve to go to a BCS game? We will not be a deserving BCS team.
Oh, that's baloney.
We won't, because there will be too many once-beaten teams that I think have
a once-beaten West
Texas,
Virginia,
no.
a once-beaten Louisville, or somebody like that.
Ridiculous examples, sure. Once-beaten West Virginia is not going to be in the BCS, okay? The loser of the West Virginia-Louisville game is going to be out of the BCS. So use reasonable examples like a once-beaten Texas team, a once-beaten SEC team. They are both good potential BCS at-large teams.
And if
we have two losses, I'm not sure that we should go to the BCS.
Well, a once-beaten Texas team won't be an at-large team because
they might be.
That implies that if they're once-beaten, they're going to run the table, including winning their conference championship.
Well, that's a good point.
You're running out of teams, pal. You're not going to have enough teams
that's
to fill out the BCS.
Yeah, well, you're right. If
so
we're
a
BCS,
twice-beaten Notre Dame team.
We're going to be a bubble team again and have to put up with all the arguments of Notre Dame's not eligible. Let's agree on this. Let's just go out to L.A., take care of business out there, and then we don't have to worry about it. And that's what this program needs at this point, is to eliminate the bubble stigma, right? We're just always on the edge. Every time we've been in the BCS, it's been a two-loss team, and the debate was, were we worthy, and we get beat decisively. Or
what we need, even more important than beating USC, is a bowl win. That's what's most important. Folks, you've been listening to Dome and Domer, and it's a fan's perspective on Notre Dame sports. You can find us at Dome and Domer at WSBT.com. We're sponsored by the South Bend Chocolate Factory. We're going to be back with a new show on Thursday, previewing that all-important game against the Naval Academy. Until then, this is Ed Sullivan and Mike Sullivan for Dome and Domer saying so long, everybody.